Welcome everyone to today's Autistic Moment, a podcast for autistic adults by an autistic adult. My name is Philip King Lowe. I am the owner, producer, and host, and I am an autistic adult. Thank you so very much for listening. Today's Autistic Moment is a member of the Autistic Podcasters Network. Today's Autistic Moment is a free podcast that puts autistic adults front and center, where our stories are always the headline. This first segment of today's Autistic Moment is sponsored by the Autism Society of Minnesota, Minnesota's first autism resource. For over 50 years, the Autism Society of Minnesota has been honored to support Minnesota's autism community. Visit them online at ausm.org. Thank you for joining me for this episode, Neuroqueering, Time for Action. Dr. Nick Walker is my guest for this show. Please visit todaysautisticmoment.com, where you can listen to the podcast, get transcripts, program updates, and read the guest bios pages. Please visit the Future Shows page to get the titles, guests, and descriptions of all the shows coming up through December. The transcripts are sponsored by Minnesota Independence College and Community. The transcripts can be read and followed from the website. There is a link provided to get access to a document form of the transcript that you can print it so it won't use up the ink on your printer. The written document transcript has a font that is accessible for dyslexics. While visiting the website, please consider supporting the work of Today's Autistic Moment with a financial donation or purchase an item from the logo shop. Please follow Today's Autistic Moment on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Want to chat with me and other listeners? Join Today's Autistic Moment community group page on Facebook. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel at Today's Autistic Moment to watch any episode of Autistic Voices Roundtable Discussions. You are invited to join me and six autistic individuals on the YouTube channel at Today's Autistic Moment on Wednesday, October 19th at 2 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time for Autistic Voices Roundtable Discussions, Your Behavior is Not Appropriate. Every autistic has heard those words too many times to count on our fingers and toes. Most likely, there are autistics out there who just heard a manager at their workplace tell them that their behavior is not appropriate. Autistics have heard those words from parents or while dating someone. Autistics hear the words, "your behavior is not appropriate," when we have tried to ask someone for help or spoken up at an event where they ask for the input of everyone there. The autistic gives their input through our unique way of communicating, and we get told our behavior, along with what we said, was not appropriate. Six autistic individuals are going to talk together about how we feel when we hear someone say those words. Please join us for this incredible conversation. One final note before we dig into our topic of discussion. Give to the Max Day is on November 16th. Give to the Max Day is an opportunity to donate to Minnesota's many nonprofit organizations. Today's Autistic Moment is being sponsored this year by four outstanding Minnesota nonprofit organizations that offer support services to Minnesota's autism community. The Autism Society of Minnesota, Minnesota Independence College and Community, Looking Forward Life Coaching, the Autism Mentorship Program. Starting today, you will hear some ads during October and early November asking you to donate to those organizations on Give to the Max Day. When you donate to those organizations through Give to the Max Day, you help them in their work and support today's autistic moment at the same time. If you are listening to this episode and you are completely satisfied with your understanding and definition of what neuronormative is, what heteronormativity is, and what cis heteronormativity is, chances are you will not be by the end of this episode. Society and a number of diverse communities have been socially constructed to understanding what the various neurotypes are. A neurotypical brain is considered to be a normal brain. An autistic brain is not normal. An ADHD brain is not a normal brain. One who is straight is socially constructed as a normal sexual orientation. To be gay, bisexual, pansexual, asexual, intersexual are thought to be abnormal. To be a cisgender woman or a cisgender man is to be a, quote, normal gender. To be a woman assigned at birth who discovers that they are a man, or to be a man assigned at birth who discovers that they are a woman, or a person who discovers that they do not fit any gender stereotypes, who discovers that they are non-binary, is not gender normal. The neuroqueer theory and the queer theory that have been developed by our guest today, Dr. Nick Walker, suggests that we do have some choices as to whether we will make ourselves live exactly how society has constructed what neuronormativity, heteronormativity, and cis heteronormativity are, or we can choose to go against all of that to be who we really are. Over the last few months, I have become more convinced that neurodivergent people are gender non-conforming. Our unique way of how we interact with the world also conflicts with how we do or do not conform to what our gender norms are. The more we mask being autistic or ADHD to appear as neuronormative, the more we are trying to conform to what being straight or cisgender means. When we accept who we are and take the masks off and not try to conform anymore, we also no longer try to conform to how society defines what is heteronormative or cis-heteronormative. Are these things a matter of choice? Are these a matter of how we are born and are created? Are these things a matter of a pathological understanding of diverse sexual orientations, gender identities, expressions, and neurotypes? Or are they challenging to our social understanding of LGBTQIA+, and straight people, and neurodivergence? Dr. Nick Walker is the author of the book Neuroqueer Heresies, Notes on the Neurodiversity Paradigm, Autistic Empowerment, and Post-Normal Possibilities. Dr. Walker's book is engaging, challenging, and highly controversial. As the conversations about diagnosis versus identification, we are born neurodivergent, straight, LGBTQIA+, continue in the international debate for equality and equity become more intense, Dr. Walker adds an important layer to how we might think of what they mean. If you are finding that you are challenged by this view of these conversations, so am I. In the first part of segment 4 of today's episode, I am going to share with you some of my thoughts on what Dr. Walker will talk about in just a few minutes. Stay tuned after this first commercial break to listen to Dr. Nick Walker talk about neuroqueer and queer theories. Today's Autistic Moment can be downloaded and heard on most podcast apps, including Apple, Google Play, Breaker, CastBox, Overcast, iHeartRadio, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, Spotify, TuneIn, Pandora, Amazon Music, Audible, Podcast Addict, Podcast Chaser. If you are looking for the transcripts, go to todaysautisticmoment.com, click on the episode you want to listen to, and follow the directions to find the transcripts. Thank you for listening to today's Autistic Moment.
Support comes from Minnesota Independence College and Community, a life and career skills program for young adults with autism and learning differences. Help a young adult take a step towards their independence and a vibrant life. Learn more at miccommunity.org.
Dr. Nick Walker, thank you so very much for joining me on today's Autistic Moment. David Gray Hammond mentioned your name last spring, and I felt it was a good thing to look you up and get you on the show. So welcome today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, the first thing I'm going to ask you to do as part of my first question, what important information do autistic adults and our caregivers need to know about? I'm going to ask you to begin by defining, in your words, what neuroqueer means. Go ahead.
Okay, it's a long answer. Well, essentially, what I coined the term neuroqueer back in 2008, and as part of what's developed into what I call neuroqueer theory. And neuroqueer theory is an extension of queer theory into the realm of neurodiversity. So in queer theory, in a lot of areas of queer theory, we look at this idea of heteronormativity or cis heteronormativity, the way that people are socially trained and pressured to conform to certain binary gender norms and performances of masculinity and femininity, this idea that gender roles are socially learned and socially enforced. And so in that context, what queer means, queer is first and foremost a verb, that to queer cis heteronormativity, to queer heteronormative binary gender roles, means essentially to mess with and subvert these roles, these enforced systems of normativity to deviate from, refuse to comply with heteronormativity, cisnormativity, the socially imposed performance of this is how you do masculinity and this is how you do femininity. So queering in that sense, you know, queer becomes not a fixed identity. It's not about, it's kind of a rejection of the idea of, oh, people are straight or gay because they're born that way. And more the idea that ways of doing gender and sexuality are socially learned performances, and socially learned performances are things that we can choose to liberate ourselves from by living differently and embodying ourselves differently. And so neuroqueer theory extends that into the realm of neurodiversity by saying neuronormativity works the same way as heteronormativity and cisnormativity. And neuronormativity, in fact, is very entwined with heteronormativity. And so it's this further sense of, oh, neuronormativity, like heteronormativity, like normative binary gender performance, neuronormativity can be queered. The socially imposed and socially enforced systems of what it means to be a so-called normal, you know, to think normally, to act normally. This is something that we can actively queer and subvert and choose to liberate ourselves from. So that's neuroqueer theory. And it's sort of this combination of, I'd say, two principles that, you know, the term neuroqueer points towards two principles. One, that we can queer neuronormativity in the same way that we queer, you know, that people can queer heteronormativity and binary gender roles. And two, essentially, because neuronormativity and cis heteronormativity are so entwined with one another, to queer one ultimately is to queer the other. You queer your gender performance enough and you've deviated from normative ways of thinking, and you queer your performance of neuronormativity enough, and you're no longer performing a traditional gender role either in the way that society expects it to be performed. So yeah, that's neuroqueer theory. It's complex, and it has interesting implications for how we think about neurodiversity that I'm sure we'll get into later on in the conversation.
Sure. Well, David Gray Hammond is such an articulate person because this is one of those things that David said back in April. Neuroqueer theory at its basis, it asks you to question just how much of what we hold to be true is a social construct.
Mm-hmm.
because David had, you know, talked a lot about queering language.
Yes.
He talked a lot about that in many ways, autistics and other neurodivergents, we are queering language
mm-hmm.
around neurotypes. Go ahead and talk about that.
Okay. Well, yes, we certainly are. We're queering language. And in fact, I'll queer some language right now by saying that neuroqueer theory rejects the concept of neurotypes. So, yeah. So the standard, again, looking at that neuroqueer theory as an extension of queer theory, you know, before queer theory came along, the conception, people's conception was essentialist, sort of the concept of sexual orientation and gender and such was like, which gender? It was like, okay, you were born male or you're born female. And with sexual orientation, it was about, okay, well, you're either you're born straight or you're born gay. In the early gay rights movement, people were saying, you know, we're gay because we're born that way. But as queer theory developed, it started looking at how this was all socially constructed, that a person, you know, might be male or female in a purely biological sense, if you're going by like shape of genitalia or something. But maleness and femaleness are, you know, masculinity and femininity are social constructs and can be queer, and we can alter them and alter our performance of them and decide not to conform, say, with the particular you know, gender role that we were assigned at birth, or not to conform to any socially established gender role. And similarly with sexuality, that it's sure, it's possible that people are born with specific sexual proclivities and orientations. We haven't found a gene for that or a biomarker for that, so that's all speculation. We know that it's to a large extent, how people do sexuality is socially learned and socially constructed, and people can make choices and change. You know, am I going to perform this sort of, you know, am I going to perform this particular socially sanctioned brand of heterosexuality as, you know, a traditional masculine man or feminine women, the way that society tells us to play those roles? Or am I going to do something else? Am I going to diverge from those and do something more creative, follow my inclinations and become something else, in other words, to queer the heteronormativity and the gender norms? And so similarly with neuronormativity, the traditional model that has been adopted in the traditional sort of, you know, the traditional, what I call the pathology paradigm, the traditional sort of medicalized model that pathologizes autism, but also within the neurodiversity movement. The way that neurodiversity has been conceptualized is with this idea of neurotypes, this idea that there are, you know, people are born with certain types of brains. You know, people are born neurotypical, or they're autistic, or, you know, some of these other things that we call like ADHD or dyslexic or something. There's not a whole lot of scientific evidence for this, I gotta say. There is, you know, certainly we can see that people are, certain people are born with particular sets of tendencies that we can categorize. We can, you know, we can choose to categorize as autistic and, you know, draw a line around certain groups of people and say that these people are autistic. But the attempts to find like what are the distinguishing qualities of a so-called autistic brain, or the attempts to find, you know, an autism gene or something, that's just not happening. They haven't found that, not for lack of trying. You know, millions upon millions of dollars of research into that stuff, and there's still not clear autistic biomarkers established that say, oh yeah, these people are just born autistic. And similarly, there's certainly no such thing as a neurotypical brain. That just reinforces the pathology paradigm. It just uses neurotypical as a synonym for normal, and we know there's no such thing as a normal person. So there's these things, once again, are socially constructed. Neurotypicality is just a social construct. Neurotypicality, you know, being neurotypical is just like being straight. It just means someone is conforming to socially constructed standards of normative behavior. There's nothing biological or innate about it. And so the lens of neuroqueer theory is very different from, I set out with neuroqueer theory to queer neuronormative concepts and such, but also to queer the neurodiversity movement and its tendency towards essentialism, its tendency to get into the people are born this way or that way idea, because I don't think that the concept of neurotypes is either scientifically valid or useful. I think it does more harm than good and creates the sense of alienation and separateness, and it's just another way of putting people into little boxes and limiting people's sense of what their potentials are. So, if you start from this essentialist assumption that people are born neurotypical or they're born neurodivergent in particular ways, you're missing so much of what of human potential. Nobody is, nobody is born straight. People are, some people have tendencies that might be innate. We don't know for sure, but some people have tendencies in particular directions, in terms of their sexuality and gender. And some people can live comfortably within their society's standards of heteronormative performance. But nobody's born straight. Straight just means that a person is conforming with heteronormative performance rules imposed by society. And, as the queer theorists frequently say, nobody's stuck being straight. Anybody can choose to queer their performance of gender and sexuality, and then they're not straight anymore because they've stepped outside of that performance of being straight. And so neuroqueer theory says the same thing about neurotypicality. There's no such thing as a neurotypical brain. There's no such thing as a neurotypical mind. Neurotypicality is a socially learned and socially enforced performance. And in fact, anyone can liberate themselves from it. And so that kind of disintegrates the whole idea of neurotypes and invites, just as queer theory invites a sexual fluidity and a gender fluidity, an ongoing self-creation, neuroqueer theory extends that into a neurofluidity.
One thing that I have been observing over the last few months is that autistics and neurodivergence seems to suggest gender nonconformity for everyone. I know of a man who is straight, but and is autistic, but he also has some he's also one of those who, for example, has a lot of sensitivities that the quote unquote, sorry for using it, typical male does not do, and there may be some autistic women who don't necessarily portray everything that is feminine. And then, of course, we've been seeing a lot more of autistics discovering that they don't fit into any gender, anything of what society expects a gender to be. So they know that they are non-binary, and these things are what I'm trying to say is that I just can't help but recognize that in many of the autistics I've interviewed that I interact with, we are not so gender conforming, and so it's an interesting thing. In that regard, what do you think?
Oh, I very much agree. Absolutely. Yes. And I think that again, that goes all the way back to the roots. So the basic starting premises of neuroqueer theory, which is that heteronormativity, cis heteronormativity, that whole normative performance of binary gender roles, cis heteronormativity is inextricably entwined with neuronormativity. And so if you're queering one, you are queering the other. What beyond a certain point, it's like there's when we think about what do binary gender roles look like, the socially sanctioned, socially enforced binary gender roles, including heterosexuality,
Right.
and how to do masculinity and femininity according to the dominant culture. Well, these are neurotypical performances. How to perform masculinity in a socially sanctioned way is a performance of not just masculinity, but neurotypical masculinity. And similarly, when neurotypicality is imposed on autistic people, it's always gendered. Behaviorists who are trying to force children, autistic children, to conform to neurotypical standards of behavior, it's very much gendered neurotypical standards of behavior. So it's always entwined. So when a person is openly autistic, they're queering neuronormativity by virtue by being openly autistic, clearly diverging from neurotypicality, which is what we mean when we say neurodivergent. We mean diverging from neurotypical performance. And in the process of doing that, they inevitably also diverge in some way from cis heteronormative gender role performance. So it's very much entwined.
After this next commercial break, Dr. Walker and I will continue with our engaging conversation.
Hello, autism community. My name is Lisa Morgan. I'm an autistic adult too, and I know firsthand what it feels like to be unintentionally harmed by well-meaning professionals when reaching out for help. My passion is to help autistic people find and use their own unique strengths to help themselves. Are you rule-based, a literal thinker, have a focused interest? Let's figure out together how to use the strengths of autism to find solutions. I offer life coaching for autistic adults and individualized workshops for professionals. To find out more, go to autismcrisissupport.com.
Support for today's autistic moment comes from Best Care Home Care Agency. Best Care offers PCA Choice, homemaking, and 245D services throughout the metro and greater Minnesota. Visit their website, bestcaremn.com, to learn more about their services. I know you are loving today's autistic moment. My guests are outstanding. The topics we discuss are relevant to what is happening in the lives of autistic adults and our caregivers. The podcast is being referenced to during conversations about autistic adults. The best is yet to come. Go to the logo shop on todaysautisticmoment.com and buy yourself a 16-ounce drinking cup and or a lapel pin with a logo of today's autistic moment beautifully crafted on them. Enjoy your favorite beverage all day long. Wear the lapel pin on your shirt, blouse, jacket, pocket, suit coat, or put it on your purse or duffel bag and start a conversation about your favorite autistic podcast. Customers who purchase a 16-ounce drinking cup and or a lapel pin will receive one purple-colored stylus ballpoint pen with black ink and today's autistic moment's name crafted on the pen for free. Get them now while supplies last. Thank you for listening to today's autistic moment.
Make a difference for autistic teens. Put your Give to the Max dollars to work to give the next generation of autistic young people the resource that many autistic adults say was missing from their own lives, a meaningful connection with an adult who truly understands. The Autism Mentorship Program pairs autistic teens with autistic adults in one-to-one mentoring relationships that provide youth with emotional support and a sense of identity and belonging, empowering them to gain confidence and thrive. Help change a young autistic person's life. Visit autismmentorshipprogram.org and click on the orange donate button to contribute your tax-deductible donation today.
My last question that we're going to be exploring is, what steps should autistic adults and our supporters take to advocate for neuroqueering, I'm going to say. I'm sorry, here's, I had a blank. One of the things that David Gray Hammond said back in April that I'd like you to maybe comment on is that one of the things that the autistic community has actually been doing is queering the word disability, because in many ways it's the autistic community that's been queering that word to imply, you know, disability is a social construct and it's also a form of oppression. And so that's just something that David Gray Hammond spoke of. I wonder if you want to comment about that.
Well, that doesn't come from the autistic community originally. I think what David is referring to is the social model of disability, and the social model of disability was developed by disability rights activists really before there was an autistic activist community or a neurodiversity movement, but the neurodiversity movement is very much based on the social model of disability and very much inspired by the disability rights activism that was, you know, based in it. So it's a lot of the neurodiversity movement is very much entwined with the rest of the disability rights movement and very based in very based on the social model of disability.
So
I certainly encourage, you know, I encourage anyone who's interested in that. There's so much good writing available on the social model of disability. And in my book, Neuroqueer Heresies, I have a chapter on neurodivergence and disability that really goes into depth and, you know, sort of gives a basic outline of what the social model of disability is and how it applies in relation to neurodivergence.
Yeah.
I'll say that I'm the disability-related work that we do, the autistic community does in advocating for itself, and then the neurodiversity movement does, and the disability-related, all the disability-related work that's done based on the social model of disability is very important. You know, it's an essential part of creating a better world for autistic people, for other neuro minorities, and for humanity in general, because I mean, everybody starts to encounter disablement as they age if they live long enough. And so it's really in the interest of all humanity to start looking, looking at the social model of disability and looking at, well, how do we continue to enable, how do we build a world that's very much based around inclusion of people regardless of what their abilities are. So this is something that's very important. I'll also say, though, in terms of where I'm going with neuroqueer theory, I'm very interested in looking outside of the lens of disability. There are forms of neurodivergence that aren't really directly related to disability. And there are, if we're talking about queering, neuroqueering, if we're talking about queering neuronormativity and liberation from the strictures that normativity places on human potential, we are talking about, certainly about addressing the disablement of many neurodivergent people, but we're also talking about human creative potentials that maybe don't directly connect to the topic of disability. So I'm interested in that as well. I don't want to see part of what I'm doing with neuroqueer theory is try to expand people's scope, because as very important, extremely important as anti-ableist work is, I don't want to see the neurodiversity movement become just about that, or I want to see it stop being just about that. I think that there's enormous human creative potential in the diversity of our minds and our ability to queer our consciousness and alter and develop our own minds in creative ways. And some of that involves looking beyond the lens of disability and toward, toward lenses like creativity. And so, yeah, I don't want to see the conversation limited to being just about disability. I don't want to see the conversation about autism, even much less neurodiversity in general, be limited to just being about disability, because I mean, there is that important question around disability, which is how do we create the necessary accommodations and produce, undo systems of oppression and exclusion and make possible the increased inclusion and societal participation of autistic people. This is a crucial, essential question, and something that autistic activists have been working on for a long time, and there's still a lot of work to be done. But having, as we increase inclusion, as the movement succeeds, as we increasingly find accommodations, as we allow, for instance, non-speaking autistic people to participate in academic environments using, text-to-speech technology and such, or other assistive communication technologies, as we create environments where the sensory environment or the pacing of things is more flexible to allow greater neurominority participation. As we do all of this, we increasingly have the question, well, what do we do then? What do we do if we're building, there's enormous creative potential in neurodiversity, in having a diversity of ways of thinking about things available. And if we're only thinking about how to do the inclusion into existing society, we're missing a big chunk of that potential, which is what are the unique creative potentials of various neurodivergent minds to expand our systems, to change society, to rewrite culture. And so that's what I'm interested in, because there's so many people doing the disability related work, and it's important work again, but I'm very interested in the creative potentials, looking beyond just alleviating ableism and looking into what can we all do with our minds creatively? What can we do? How can we all creatively alter our own individual consciousness? And how can that contribute to a vast queering of culture and undoing of the cultural limitations of normativity?
Yeah. Before we conclude this interview and conversation, which is really excellent, I have been following and expressing concern on my show about this recent ongoing waves of bills limiting gender affirming care, and mm-hmm. also the impact of that on autistic people in general, especially mm-hmm. Because what they're essentially saying is that trans individuals and autistic people are not capable or competent at making our own health choices. And obviously I'm really concerned about that, because I don't like the message it sends to either and both groups of people. So I'm wondering if you'd like to comment on that before we close.
Yeah. I think, Remy Yergo, in their book Authoring Autism, addresses this really well, talks about how the imposition of normative gender, the suppression of any divergence from assigned at birth gender roles, how that is used to, also impose neuronormativity and, oppress neurominorities. And then it goes the other way too, how the oppression of neurominorities becomes a backdoor into pathologizing queerness. And so this very much something to watch out for. It is a major concern. If you can deny gender-affirming care to people for being autistic, it's a short step from there to denying gender-affirming care to everybody, because if somebody wants gender-affirming care, you can always say it must mean they're autistic and therefore not qualified to make their decisions about that. So it's, this is part of a broader cultural backlash against the rising tide of old norms are breaking down. We live increasingly in post-normal times where the old norms are crumbling,
right?
And the rise of queer cultures and greater queerness and disintegration of old gender norms and the rise of autistic culture and other neurominority cultures and the all the disintegration really of all of the normative cultures, threats to heteronormativity and cisnormativity and neuronormativity and white supremacism and all threats to all of these old systems of imposed oppressive normativity. There's a backlash going on against that. So we're seeing a rise in fascism and a rise in basically authoritarians doing everything they can to maintain control and cling to the old norms. Yeah. And that's going to be going on for a while. That's going to be messy. And changes like this, shifting of paradigms and liberations and disintegration of norms and people's attempts to cling to and more brutally enforce the old norms as they get more desperate. These things unfold over the course of generations. Right, so yeah. I don't think we're going to see an end to it anytime soon. And I think a lot of people are going to get hurt in the process. I think we are going to see a lot of autistic people denied, autistic trans people denied gender affirming care. And of course, we'll all do our best to fight it. But it's gonna take some doing. Part of a much broader ongoing culture war.
Yeah, and especially since one of the people who's politically involved in this made a determination that, before they receive gender-affirming care, they should first be, quote, evaluated for autism, because gender dysphoria is common among people with ASD, is the comment that was made. Mm-hmm. So again, that's signaling a terrible culture that believes that those of us who are bucking the systems, as we say, that they have to continue dominating us and determining where we go with this, basically.
Right. What's going to happen is that people are going to increasingly find ways to work outside of the existing systems to bypass this stuff. And I mean, that's just, people are creative. People will find ways if they're determined. Before there was gender affirming care available, there were still people who were, still people who were being trans in whatever way they could and doing that in whatever way they could. And, I'm trans femme and clearly have not begun a real outward physical transition process. And I'm exploring, how am I going to do that off the books where it being trans is not in my healthcare records? I had a similar journey around being autistic, where I managed to find the right channels to get, to explore that and keep it off the books at the same time and outside of my medical records. And I think that's, people should look at that. I think people should think about that more early on when they're looking at, am I autistic? I recommend against diagnosis these days. You don't need anyone to, you don't need some non-autistic authority to tell you if you're autistic or not. And I think that the dangers to one's civil rights of having an autism diagnosis in official medical records are not worth it. So I recommend doing as much as possible off the books, generally speaking, whether we're talking about gender or neurodivergence or whatever. I would say start bypassing the established systems now, before it becomes clear that they're a trap.
Yeah, there is some movement to detach from the medical diagnosis instead of calling it autistic diagnosis to an autistic identification. Mm-hmm. Is some of the words that people are using these mm-hmm. days. Yeah. Well, Dr. Nick Walker, I want to thank you so much for this great interview and for challenging some of our modern concepts of things. You certainly give a lot to think about and a lot of stuff to chew on, as we say.
That is what I do.
Yeah, that's right. And I really appreciate it. So thank you for being here today. And
thank you so much for having me here.
You're welcome. You're welcome. After this final commercial break, I am going to respond to what Dr. Nick Walker has said with some comments of my own. Immediately following that, today's Autistic Community Bulletin Board. As Minnesota's first autism resource for over half a century, the Autism Society of Minnesota continues to serve Minnesota's autism community. When you give to Awesome on Give to the Max Day, the autism community gets more support and services. Give to get the accessible, inclusive Minnesota we deserve. Give to get more training to help people understand the challenges and strengths of autism. Give to get more educators better equipped to teach autistic students. Your support for Awesome helps autistic adults build social bonds and community. Give to get your voice heard in our shared advocacy to get legislative progress on disability rights. On Give to the Max Day, give to further Awesome's mission to create connections, empowering everyone in the autism community with resources needed to live fully. Give to get autism awareness leveled up to autism acceptance. Give to a better place to live for Minnesota's autism community.
Looking Forward Life Coaching helps change stumbling blocks of life into stepping stones towards success. Life can be complicated, almost like a river. At times there are rapids, and other times it kindly winds along its path. To have a guide as you navigate this river of life is essential. To be encouraged and supportive during both the rapids and calm path is something Looking Forward Life Coaching can provide. We meet one-on-one with our clients within their local community or virtually, to provide resources and tools to help survive the rapids and enjoy the calm waters. If this is something you're interested in, please feel free to schedule a free meet and greet. Email us at info@lookingforwardlc.org or call 612-504-7414. We look forward to helping you change stumbling blocks of life into stepping stones towards success.
Due to a scheduling conflict, Pete Warmby is not able to join us on October 15th as was planned. Instead, Kelly Lenza is going to be my guest to talk about addressing fat phobia for autistic adults. Kelly Lenza is an autistic who advocates against fat phobia. Autistics in larger bodies face hurdles with eating disorders, food options with our sensory issues with food textures and gestation, healthcare, clothing, and society's expectations. Kelly will talk about their own hurdles and why autistics in larger bodies have the issues they do and what they can do to advocate for themselves. On November 5th, Ashlyn Baker will be my guest to talk about overlapping triggers and soothers in autistic relationships. Each autistic individual has their own sensory profile. When different autistics are in the same space, their sensory triggers and soothers will overlap. This scenario is very common for autistic parents with autistic children, or autistic spouses, or roommates, or coworkers. How do autistics negotiate our triggers and soothers? What are some strategies we might need? Ashlyn Baker is a mental health professional and owner of the podcast, I Married Your Therapist. Ashlyn's expertise is talking about autistic relationships. Join us for this great show. On November 19th, my guest Sarah Dwan will join me for the episode Neuroaffirming Therapy Options for Autistics. On December 3rd, Mitchell Shapps from In Neurodivergent will be my guest to talk about planning neuroaffirming holiday social events. Finishing up Season 3 of Today's Autistic Moment on December 17th, Taz Crombie will join me for the episode, Autistic Professionals Supporting the Autistic Community. Check out the Future Shows page on todaysautisticmoment.com for all shows coming up through December. Do you have any topic ideas for future episodes of Today's Autistic Moment? Go to the Contact Us page on todaysautisticmoment.com and submit your topic suggestions. Go to the page for Be My Guest to submit a guest intake form if you would like to be a guest. Thank you for listening to Today's Autistic Moment. I have some comments to add to what Dr. Walker has been saying. I want to begin by thanking Dr. Walker for what she said. I agree with her that we have choices to make to conform or not to conform to the social constructs of being neurodivergent, straight, LGBTQ, queer, and be of accepted or unaccepted gender norms. All of these are important parts of the discussions about the work towards equal rights and inclusion for everyone that includes dismantling ableism. I am concerned by references that no one is born gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender or straight, but can make choices as to what we will be. My concern is because those who are working in opposition to LGBTQ plus equality and autism acceptance suggest that we have chosen to live in unnatural ways of sexual orientation, gender identity expression, and or neurological differences, and that is why we are, quote, disordered. This is how they encourage the use of destructive conversion therapies to get LGBTQ people and autistics to be fixed or cured to conform to what society has constructed us to be. In my own journey of self-acceptance as a gay man, I was active with an ex-gay group about 15 years ago to try to deny who I am to be someone I am not meant to be. I was active in that group for 17 months. At the end of that time, I made the decision that I would accept myself as I am. I also accepted that I am loved as I am, and that I have every reason to celebrate how I love others the way I was created to love them. If I try to love others in ways that I was not created to love them, I am living in denial of who I really am. Whatever the scientific evidence there is or is not, I believe that being neurodivergent is not only how we see the world, it is also a unique way of loving ourselves and the world around us. I feel that the conversations about whether we are created and are born as neuronormative versus neurodivergent, that our sexual orientations are straight, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and that our gender is cisgender or transgender or whatever we choose to conform to, the social constructs of what they mean, are a matter of both and not either or. I believe that we are created and born as we are, and that we have choices as to what we will do with who we are and whom we will become. My comments are made from a combination of faith and spirituality, science, social inclusion, and my 54 years of personal experience and reflection on them. My journey of faith has taken me through every sect of Christianity, including fundamentalism, the Wesleyan Methodists, Catholicism, and finally to being an Episcopalian and a Benedictine monastic. I am a very deeply prayerful and contemplative thinker. My mentioning these are not an attempt to proselytize anyone to accept and or believe what I do, but to explain how I organize my thoughts and words. Back when I was attending a Christian liberal arts college, I took a really wild class called Epic Making Events in Science, also called EMEVS. The course included a combination of the sciences of physics, chemistry, biology, philosophy, and Christian theology. When the professor spoke of the controversies of creationism versus evolution, he surmised that human beings are created and then we evolve. They are not mutually exclusive of each other. I believe that we are all created out of love, to love and to be loved, and our dignity, whomever we happen to be, is to be respected. Our sexual orientation, gender, gender identity expression, and neurology are innate in who we are and who we are born to be. In Psalm 139, verse 12, the psalmist wrote, "For you yourself created my inmost parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I will thank you because I am marvelously made. Your works are wonderful, and I know it well." End of quote. Yet no one of us is born into a world in which we will not suffer because of how those who came before us have socially constructed society. As we make our way through life, we will discover many things about ourselves that have always been there, that we just didn't know earlier in our lives. Once we discover our identity, we do have choices to make as to how we will live into our identity. The more autistics mask, LGBTQ+ people closet ourselves to try to conform to what the dominant society has constructed as normative, the less we will live into who we are authentically. The more we live into who we really are, without seeking ways to be fixed, the happier we will be. We will continue to struggle and suffer because of the social constructs that impact us negatively. A good analogy of what social constructs can do is to use the ring of power in The Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring. As the Fellowship of the Ring makes their way through the mines of Moria, Frodo said that he wished that the ring had never come to him. Frodo wished that none of it had happened. Gandalf replied by saying, "So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us." We can decide to live with the world's prejudices that are based on ignorance that breeds fear and violence, or we can commit ourselves to learning and applying what we learn to change ignorance into informed knowledge, fear into a determination to make the world a better place for everyone, so that each generation can continue with what we began. Many years ago, I was talking with a priest because I was struggling intensely with my sexual orientation and my faith. The priest gave me some words from the Wisdom of Solomon, chapter 11, verses 24 to 26, that I want to share with you. And I am quoting these words from the New Revised Standard Version. Quote, "For you love all things that exist, and detest none of the things you have made. For you would not have made anything if you had hated it. How would anything have endured if you had not willed it? Or how would anything not called forth by you have been preserved? You spare all things, for they are yours. O Lord, you who love the living." I know what I have said here is deeply controversial, and many of you do not agree with me. I know firsthand how religion has been misused to dehumanize and traumatize LGBTQ, neurodivergent people, and many other minorities. If mentioning religion and faith has made you angry, I understand and I don't blame you. I also know firsthand that when religion and faith are proclaimed as a means of healing and reconciliation, people of faith can accomplish a lot of good that sadly goes unnoticed and acknowledged. Lastly, no one has the right to make you feel that you have no right to exist. You have every reason to advocate for yourself to be happy, accepted, affirmed, and celebrated. Thank you for listening to my commentary. One of my autistic strengths is that I am wordy to a fault. That is why this particular show is longer than normal. So thank you for staying around to hear what I have said. Today's Autistic Community Bulletin Board. All of these events with their links can be found at todaysautisticmoment.com/bulletin board. Join the Autism Society of Minnesota for their Adult Coffee Club. The next coffee clubs will be on Tuesday nights from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Dogwood Coffee in St. Paul on October 10th, October 24th, and November 21st. Coffee Club meetings will be at the Milkweed Cafe in Minneapolis on October 16th and November 13th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Please RSVP at ausm.org. Understanding Autism virtual classes will be offered by the Autism Society of Minnesota. These classes are perfect for autistic individuals, caregivers, those who want to understand the basics of autism and support autistic people. Classes will be on October 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. and December 18th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Classes are free of charge, but you must register to attend. Register today to attend the Autistic Community Summit on October 14th, beginning at 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Lionsgate Academy in Shoreview, Minnesota. There will be a full hybrid of in-person and virtual options, integrated social opportunities, half-hour and full-hour breakout sessions, and discussion groups. The cost to attend is $35 per person, and scholarships are available. Click on the link to register on the bulletin board page for todaysautisticmoment.com or go to AUSM.org. Go to AUSM.org to download the 2023-2024 Education Catalog with the details of all the educational and social opportunities offered by the Autism Society of Minnesota. MIN Neurodivergent is a social club rooted in a vision of bringing neurodivergent Minnesotans together to build meaningful connections. Its core principle is to foster an environment where all are treated with dignity and respect regardless of ability or preference. Go to the bulletin board at todaysautisticmoment.com to click on the meetup link to become a member and attend their events. Matthew, the hashtag #ActuallyAutisticCoach, has room in his Finding Your Autistic Self group coaching groups. In the groups, participants learn about unmasking strategies, coping tools, burnout and post-burnout support, and much more. Go to autisticcoach.com and click on Autism Groups for more information. Excuse me. While visiting Matthew's website, be sure to check out the free autistic discussion circles for autistics of various age groups, careers, students, and ethnic groups. Today's Autistic Moment is sponsored in part by Looking Forward Life Coaching. Looking Forward turns stumbling blocks into stepping stones towards success. Go to lookingforwardlc.org for more information. Today's Autistic Moment is here because of the generosity of supporters and sponsors. Please join the supporters by clicking on Support Today's Autistic Moment on todaysautisticmoment.com. If you work for a company or organization that supports autistic adults and the movement for neurodiversity, I would love to have you sponsor ads on the show. If you would like to sponsor an ad or have questions about Today's Autistic Moment, please send an email to todaysautisticmoment@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to Today's Autistic Moment, a podcast for autistic adults by an autistic adult. May you have an autistically amazing day. All of the guests meet with me on Zoom to record the interviews. The podcast is created and prepared on Spotify for Podcasters. The music that you hear is licensed to Today's Autistic Moment by PremiumBeat.com.